supervisors from Monterey County, sounding like an ingenue, saying that this corporation seemed to understand the problems. They had met with them, and they felt they were working with them. You know, there's not going to be any working with this corporation. They're going to do what they're going to do. So everybody sounds like a little ingenue and meetings, and I think whatever the DeAnza people are capable of militant-wise, let them go for it.
Well, there's always a possibility of moving a trailer or two down to City Hall. How about that? You know, we're doing a little camp out there. We tried that one with homeless people, and it would be nice to see the DeAnza folks who have been criticized by the homeless community, some of them, for essentially being not just oblivious to homeless civil rights, but actually in some cases, some DeAnza people encouraging criminalization of the poor in terms of the parking areas up there, to join hands with that group.
Well, here we have the punitive side of you again, Robert. Let's just keep their issues separate. I mean, they're doing the best they can, and they're doing it at great handicap. Many of them are infirm. They can barely walk. They're doing the best they can in life. I mean, can't we just all get along? That's all I want to know.
Thank you, Rodney.
That's fine.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM. If you got any more DeAnza comments, give a call quickly. I'd love to hear from you. We're going to move on to other subjects, although you can always come back to this one. We're pretty free-floating here. We bounce around a lot. You could be listening to us on the net at www.freakradio.org. You could be listening to us at 101.1 FM or perhaps 96.3 FM, and you can certainly call us at 427-3772. Let's hear a little bit now of a part of a discussion with the activist Joe Williams. Joe is big on the Internet. He's been doing lots of communicating in terms of assisting the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and struggle against the downtown ordinances. And here I am looking for something I can't find on the Internet. Let's hear a little of this conversation I had with him about a month and a half ago around the issue of street performers. Joe is also a street performer, he's a peace activist, and he's running for Congress against Representative Sam Farr.
It's September 12, 2003, continuing conversation with Joe Williams, performer, political activist, peace activist, and morning coffee drinker. Good morning again, Joe.
Take two.
You've expressed some concern. You mentioned a conversation you had with Vice Mayor Kennedy where he showed you the flyer with a picture of Tom Scribner on it, boldly advertising the wonderful new street performers regulations, which also, by the way, have false statements on it, like it's illegal to perform after 10 o'clock at night. Which is not true. It's after 10 o'clock at night. Excessive noise is illegal, but certainly not performing. If you have a quiet performance, you know, you can perform after 10 o'clock at night. I'm concerned, as I was mentioning a moment ago, about the fact that there seems to be this move by the City Council, some of the members of the City Council, to disarm opposition by engaging in what, to me, are pretty meaningless, minor compromises that don't go to the heart of these issues. This permit stuff you talked about, giving a street performer 10 feet, allowing jugglers to juggle, but nobody else to be around. Maintaining all these other absurd restrictions about a frisbee or a hacky sack or sitting within 14 feet of a building. 95% of the sidewalk is off limits to everybody for sitting. 75 or more is off limits for any kind of performing. Massive police presence is not questioned, even as the budget goes ramming through and destroys the arts budget completely. You mentioned that that Kennedy and the council paid absolutely no attention to the protesters who were concerned about the destruction of the Arts Commission.
Well, yeah. There was during oral communications at the last meeting, there was a whole slew of people. I was passing out stickers, art is not an option, and I believe is what the sticker said, and there was plenty of testimony from children and every arts advocacy group in town, and they had their minds made up. They gutted it. It's gone. I mean, any city funding for arts programs is down the tubes. So, I mean, it depends on the issue. I mean, you're talking earlier about, like, well, who knows what they're going to do? I mean, that's the thing. You kind of, like, you got to play with them. They're the ones who do make the ordinances, and can repeal the ordinances if convinced otherwise. So you're kind of like they're the only game in town. I mean, so on one hand, sometimes they do things you like this impeachment resolution, which is not really an impeachment resolution, but it's something that made national.
Yeah, it's for an inquiry, not impeachment. No, inquiry. Let's do some more inquiring.
Well, yeah, that's once again, it's fine as far as it goes because it got national headlines as an impeachment resolution. So I mean, sometimes I like to talk about, you know, reality versus the perception. So the reality, yeah, some tepid little thing going to the House Judiciary Committee, which, word to the council, that's the appropriate place to send it. Maybe it is. I don't know. The vague reasons of a congressional whatevers. Does anybody out there know the difference between authorization and appropriation? There's a quiz for the day. But on the whole, it's good. It got national press. I mean, it's going to raise the issue. So on the whole, I have to say I support it. You know, and the things that they deserve to be commended, you give them credit and you praise them. And the things that they're not performing on, you continue to challenge them on. And things like, okay, that street performer brochure, I'm in favor of having a brochure of some kind that somehow celebrates and lauds street performers and says, you know, whatever the rules are, so people like know what the rules are. So it's not the police making them up on the spot. We have everybody on the same page when they go down there to try to do something, whether table or street perform or whatever activities they like to do downtown. So it's not just some arbitrary decision by whatever law enforcement agent is on, currently on the scene or on shift at the moment, which is pretty much has been what it has been in recent months. As far as, you know, legitimizing what they do, they're going to do what they do regardless of whether or not. I think some of the differences in, like, the permit process, you know, I'm glad to see that there's a brochure that's somewhat laudatory and celebratory and encouraging to street performers. On the other hand, it leaves in a lot of stuff that street performers look at and just go like, well, nice try, but. And there's all these other issues, like around the move along, around the allowing CD sales, you know, different things like this that need to be addressed. So, and the appropriate place to address it is to the council, because they're the ones who made the rules and they're the ones who can repeal the rules. So you have to deal with them in some fashion. You can't just, you know, take a, what would you call it, a hands-off position and, like, say, ah, the city council is all fucked up and yada, 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 because you pick your issues, you pick your battles, you work with them when you can, and you challenge them and oppose them when you have to. And I think that's all part and parcel of this big deal.
I guess my concern is I made the similar point to Tom Noddy, who did the Street Performers Only in Santa Cruz show last weekend, that the energy he put into a street performers event and implicitly chose not to put into an event that would emphasize the criminalization of street performers and the need for the community to resist this and to support those who are being attacked under this matter was a choice that involved funding, energy, focus, and also to some extent drawing a lot of people with him in that direction. I disagreed with that choice, and, you know, obviously, he knows how to organize events. It's a great event. I liked the event. I was allowed some opportunity to speak at the event. Tom Noddy did speak about the ordinances at the event in sort of his joking way, but his message sort of was, well, the fever is broken. We're moving into a new era. Maybe he's trying to use the hopeful approach in order to indicate that things have changed. I mean, it is true, as I mentioned, the move-along law is not being enforced as much. Mike True reports he's been down on the boardwalk for the last 4 weeks, or down near the Beach Street, and he hasn't been harassed for displaying his CDs for donation. Can't sell them, but he can display them, at least, I guess is an improvement, because in the past when he displayed his CDs for donation, he was arrested, and he's suing the city in federal court. And so that is, you know, I suppose an improvement. But again, we're talking about a choice of energy. I mean, Tom had one shot before he went back to Germany. He spends half the year in Germany to really get together stuff. And what he chose to get together was this sort of celebratory event. And the celebratory event, of course, would have been somewhat different had the city attorney had the city attorney not made the stupid maneuver that said juggling is illegal, even though it is illegal under the law, or was. And then the Councilmember Rotkin rushing in with his emergency resolution in July, saying, oh, well, we're going to change that because it's an emergency. It needs to be changed immediately. It's okay to keep arresting 95% of the people on the street for all these other absurd activities, which are simply become the basis for eliminating undesirable people, quote-unquote, or people who don't belong. But jugglers,
because of the threat of the Karamazov brothers might come back around the time of this September 5th event and do some juggling on the street. And Tom explained, well, that would be their choice. It wouldn't be his choice. He wouldn't be organizing it, but they would do when they heard about this. I guess I feel that you choose to put energy, when you chose to negotiate with Kennedy indirectly on this issue and put energy there, rather than, let's say, hold a meeting, a public meeting, and say, let's organize against this issue. What do we street performers really want? You made a choice about time and energy. You went in a certain direction. And you can say that the city council is the only game in town isn't really true. It is, of course, the body that makes the laws. However, you can either spend your time developing the power to challenge that energy, or you can go directly to them all alone and make the small deals, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, which, I know, and there you can make some nice arrangements, and there may be some better things that get done. And indeed, it may help some of those street performers, and I think it does, and these permit changes you mentioned. You know, I mean, I'm sure that's, you know, in its own small way helpful. But has, of course, it pales completely, both in terms of the street performer situation 2 years ago, when there were no such regulations, nor any need for them, and what's happening now, which is, more broadly, to the rest of the entire community downtown, the mini police state, as you describe it. What is your response to my scathing denunciation here?
I guess guilty is charged, but I guess I should point out that we haven't reached end game. We're still in the middle game on this. So I think these are just like, you know.
Yeah, but you have limited time, Joe. You haven't got time to do all this stuff. You make a choice to do one thing or the other. Or can you do both?
Well, I think it is a matter of doing both. I don't think the street performer issue is dead in the water at all. I guess let me start with the top of my head is, like, the same people who are, like, involved in the Street Performers Festival, including Naughty, whether he's leaving town or not, everybody who was involved in that, anybody who had anything to say at any of those downtown ordinance hearings and stuff, these are still people who are affected by the laws that were passed, and they're still out there, and they still feel the same way about those laws, including the downtown commission, the majority of downtown commissioners, everybody else. Nothing's changed. So in terms of, like, the game's not over yet. It's not like, okay, this is what we have. The issue is settled. The issue is far from settled. So I just see these things as, like, you know, little detours on the path. And in terms of energy, it's like, you know, I mean, I'll sit down and talk with anybody if they want to talk about, like, lessening restrictions and, like, how we can go about doing that, freeing things up, even if it's in a small way. I'll give them the time of day, and I'll strategize with them on the phone or wherever. That doesn't mean I'm going to cease other activities, and that's not what I'm suggesting everybody else does. There still needs to be exactly what you suggest. Like, the pressure needs to be generated from the street performer community, the political tablers, you know, the whole downtown commission. Everybody else roped into this and have pressure put back on for some of this. So the game's not over in any stretch of the imagination. So my activities haven't ceased. They haven't decided, like, oh, this is the best we can get, and now let's move on to another issue. This is an ongoing issue. And I still want to get the six-month review. I still think the public needs to have input on this. The rest of the downtown stakeholders, I still think the stakeholder meetings are a good idea. I still think the move-along should be challenged as it's being challenged. You know, by Steve Argue and maybe some others, if they don't keep dropping the charges, so we can take them to court on the constitutionality of that. I still think the exemptions for a display device, the council should be held to that. I mean, this is all kind of stuff that's not legitimizing anything. It's still challenging them on, like, all these other different areas and attempting to build the proper community support. I mean, the street performers probably should be. Outlining and getting together with, like, the Coalition for Community Commons. You know, I don't know when they're going to do another one of their night outs or whatever.
When they get $3,000 more.
Well, it might need to happen that way. I mean, I have to give props to Tom Naughty for the Performers Festival, because in some ways, it's focusing attention on the street performers as a positive benefit to the community, instead of looking at them as, like, some law enforcement nuisance problem that needs to be dealt with by laws and police and restrictions. So in that sense, however, like, limited you think it might, you know, the overall impact might be on that, I think it signals a change in, like, how we view these people. If you could do the same thing for political tablers, if you could do the same thing for the homeless street kids or whatever, you know, present them in a positive light, then you're going to find that you're going to have more community support when you try to get these laws repealed or changed.
Well, yes, but if you look at the media situation, I don't see street performers meeting to kind of codify what they want. I don't see stories about how different solutions have been used in different cities. I don't see proposed lawsuits coming up and publicized in any way. In other words, all these activities, they may, to some extent, are happening beneath the surface, but perhaps, and to some extent, yes, but it's not a focus that the community is aware of, and that most street performers, I think, are aware of. I think it is subsided, and I think people have, are in, instead choosing to turn to the city council for these token and minor gestures, and saying things like, it's the only game in town, you got to work on this stuff with them. I'm not saying you don't at some point, but once you got to get the power before you do that, or else you're playing in their ballpark, and their ballpark is a pretty grim, dark place.
Well, you know, maybe so. I think the, like I said, the game's not over. All I can say is, like,
games on the mall, I'm sorry.
Well, no games on the mall, but in terms of, like, I would just counsel patience. I mean, this is the race goes to the long distance runner, and I think, you know, for me personally, it's like, I'm not willing to let it go. If it takes waiting for a new city council that's more progressive and more amenable to our positions to get this stuff changed, then fine. I will be there advocating in front of that new city council. If it's determined to be hopeless in front of this city council, then I'll accept that political reality, but that doesn't mean that the issues go away. That just means they get temporarily tabled until a more opportune time. At the same time, lawsuits are always an option. I mean, I hate to advocate that, but it's like that's what the city is pushing political tablers and street performers into, is lawsuits suing the city. And I'm not sure that's what they want at the time of this budget crisis, because I think they're seriously overstepping their bounds of authority here. And based on different court cases and, like, federal appeals court cases, mind you, not just local district court or superior court or little cases like that. This is like fundamental issues of constitutionality around free speech issues. They are laying the city of Santa Cruz out there liable to be taken down on these issues. And unfortunately, either they don't care or they don't think we have a case. But if they won't listen to, like, you know,
They don't. They haven't. They've shown that.
Well, according to you, it depends on the issue. Sometimes they have, sometimes they haven't.
Give me an example of when they have.
Well, look at the stuff they've passed. They came out against the Iraq war. I mean, stuff like this.
One point, a year ago, they came out against the Iraq war. That's correct. Against getting into Iraq. They have not come out against the Iraqi war since we've gone to war.
Well, that's fine, but they made national headlines doing that. They joined court cases on the side of WHAM. I know you have your criticisms of that whole deal.
No, not if they're joining the court case on the side of WHAM. I support that. What I don't support is the inference that somehow has a lot of significance, when what they're really doing locally is denying medical marijuana to 90% of the city by destroying the cannabis clubs that are here.
Well, I agree. I think both points are valid. I think you like my previous point, if you laud them when they deserve commendation and praise, and you continue to oppose them when they don't live up to community expectations. And I think in all these different areas, they could be pushed to do more.
I'm just afraid that working to push the city council, focusing on what their ideas are, trying to communicate with them and their individual views, is a losing game at this stage, and I think may have been for quite a while, until and unless you have lots of people power. And that, I think, is the point. I mean, people who say, well, go to the city council and talk to them, of course, are advising people to spin their wheels and burn out fast, is what I'm thinking. And this was true even when Crone and Sugar and Fitzmaurice were like, and there was perhaps, a lot of people thought, the best chance to get some real changes. And while Crone did do a few things, he mediated the marimba players, worked on that, Tom Noddy worked on that issue too, 2 years ago, and they stopped, to some extent, police harassment of entertainment venues. I'm not quite sure how far they got with that, and under Lieutenant Cipone. The general movement to criminalize poor people and to criminalize street performers proceeded apace. And what perhaps needed to be done during that period was not spending your time chatting with amiable politicians who don't really want to stand up for these issues in any strong and consistent way, but organizing, you know, community groups that would enact the price if the city council, you know, follows the national trend, as, for example, has happened for the last 18 months, of criminalizing, my particular concern is homeless people and poor people, or people with rents. You know, people like Dan's a trailer park that are going to get sold out next week as they abandon rent control. These are the people who have to be organized, not at the last minute when it's, you know, but realizing that we need rent control for everybody in Santa Cruz. And then the absurd argument that Costa-Hawkins, the state law, preempts all this. Yes, it preempts vacancy control, but it doesn't preempt protection against unjust eviction, and it doesn't protect certain kinds of rent control, which has been argued for years. Somebody like Crone, who babbles about rent control but won't introduce a resolution, and his liberal successor, Porter, these are useless people on the council on fundamental issues. That's my concern. If we want to do something about the fundamental issues, we have to get together the power to persuade what are fundamentally politicians that it's costly not to pay attention. That's my...
Well, that's one tactic. That's one strategy in the toolbox. I mean, it's like I have a broader toolbox than to focus on that exclusively.
It's a toolbox you got there,
well,
big boy.
Pretty big. It's like people vote, you know, what's voting? Well, it's a little tool in the toolbox, you know, rather than say, I'm not ever going to use that tool. You know, maybe voting sometimes can do some good. If even to, like, keep somebody, you know, keep the lesser, you know, get the lesser evil in so the greater evil doesn't get in. I mean, what's that? But it's still a tool in your toolbox.
Hasta la vista, City Council.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's just one of those tools in the toolbox. So the strategy of community pressure, yes, it will work. It has worked. We look at lawsuits, working your way through the courts. That's another avenue to, like, tackle this stuff. Yes, that can work as well. Do I say, like, no, we don't do this or this? No, full bore, open front on all these areas. Yes, organized community pressure. Yes, to filing lawsuits. Yes, to lobbying city council. I think it's like...
Yes, running around naked in the middle of city council singing a Swami River?
Well...
Probably not.
Maybe not. I can see a cost-benefit analysis of that particular action.
Naked street performer?
Maybe persuaded, yeah. Well, get the Areola rebel forces need to be back in on this shit. And where are the Mamre manifestoans when we need them? But we look at, you know, for me it's like the art of the possible. You know, you get what you can out of city council, recognize what you can't, and try to get what you can, either, like you suggested, through community pressure or through, you know, filing of lawsuits and whatever. Tom Noddy's thing, the way he got the juggling thing, I thought was a little masterful stroke. I mean, maybe it didn't go far enough in your opinion, but that doesn't mean the issue's closed, we declare victory, go home. But in his communication with the council, to me it was a little bit more than that. It was more of a veiled little threat, like, oh, so juggling's illegal. You're going to arrest me. So I'm going to bring in a bunch of jugglers. We're going to stand out there and juggle 24 hours a day, you know, 7 days a week.
He didn't say that. But in essence, other jugglers did say that they would be coming to town on the 5th and the 6th.
That's just part of Noddy's strategy. It's like he's not going to say, I'm going to organize this and take everybody. The implied threat was that the Karamazovs and a bunch of other jugglers, I mean, in the packet of, you know, correspondence I saw between Noddy and the council, that was the implied threat, that they were going to come and embarrass the shit out of the city of Santa Cruz and the city council. That is why you had an emergency resolution passed. Otherwise, to justify an emergency resolution, you have to justify some kind of findings that make it an emergency. Emergency in this case.
Emergency embarrassment coming down the pike.
Emergency embarrassment coming down the pike. So I think Noddy played the council masterfully, you know, baited them with the little hook, threatened all this stuff, embarrassment, national headlines, Santa Cruz arresting jugglers at the rate of, you know, 2 per minute or something. Threatened them with that. They passed the emergency resolution. He got what he wanted. So that kind of pressure does work. He would have had the community behind him based on his personality. You know, he's well-known. He's a community hero. You know, he would have pulled it off. The city of Santa Cruz would have embarrassed. Therefore, he got an emergency resolution passed. I think these types of things are not the end-all, be-all, but I think they're one strategy and tactic in the toolbox that you can pull out, and if it works, you can repeat it. And I don't think you can be considered like a sellout or a compromiser or a legitimizer on that aspect, because the other issues haven't gone away, nor have people declared unconditional surrender and say that we give up, the city council wins, the Santa Cruz Police Department wins, the Downtown Merchants Association wins. Nobody I know has, like, you know, hoisted up the white flag and said, okay, that's all we can get, we're going home now until the next issue. People are still talking to lawyers. People are still talking to each other in the street. People are still looking at pressuring the city council. This is still an ongoing process. So if it takes a year, if it takes 2 years, if it takes fucking 5 years, you know, this is what it's going to take, and we're going to still be here fighting.
I'm sympathetic to that, but I again see that the amount of energy, for example, was put into this particular juggling deal, which I think, as I agree with you, was masterfully done. Tom spent it wasn't minimal. He spent a lot of hours doing this deal. Lots of energy, because he felt it was an issue he could win, and he was correct, and I'm glad he won it. But it stopped there, although perhaps not. Perhaps he feels that there's fallout beyond that, but now that he's shown that, that's one side, and the other side is the positive only in Santa Cruz celebration, reasonable negotiations with Mayor Riley to get a essentially minor change in the 10-foot rule. And that's, but you see, we all live in a limited period of time, and that's all that, you know, the art of the possible. That's what I hear from my dad, who wants me to vote for the Democratic Party, and I'm afraid I don't buy that one there, and I don't buy it when you say it either, really. But again, I'm an impossible character.
Well, it goes back to the same thing. It's just, you know, what are you going to do? You know, for me, it's like, you know, take voting. It's like on the national elections, it's like, you know, I'm not a Democrat person myself. They all seem to be pretty sycophantic and cover each other's butts in the Democratic
Party. Art of the possible. Lesser evil. Art of the possible.
Well, that's the thing. If you want Bush out, who are you going to vote against? I mean, who are you going to vote for? It's like whoever the fucking
Democrat. Flint. Larry Flint would work.
He's for governor, but whoever the Democrat is. Because who else is going to have a shot at beating Bush? Nobody but whoever the Democrats represent. Even if it comes down to freaking Lieberman. You know, it's like if you really want Bush out of there, you got to vote for whoever the Democrats put up. You know, cast a third-party vote, fine. That's not the way the system's set up. So once you get art of the possible, great. As much as I find it repugnant, you know, most of the people running, I'd rather cast my vote for, you know, somebody like Mumia, who's rumored to be running for the Peace and Freedom Party on the Peace and Freedom Party ticket, at least here in California, you know, or...
Well, why are you being such a spoiler? You're talking about entering a congressional race here, or an assembly race. What is it? Congressional race against Representative Uranium-Depleted Weapons. Oh, well... Sam Farr.
Right. Well, once again, art of the possible. It's like, well, I have no illusions about, you know, winning the seat. I'll be probably surprised if I do and refuse to serve if elected. But
refuse to serve you, I'll tell you.
Serve you, see. Well, it's the same kind of thing. I think by participating in the debates and the candidate forums and things like that, you get other issues raised and on the agenda. I'm under no illusions that I'm going to raise any money or, you know, sweep the election.
Spoiler, you're going to get the Republican candidate elected here, son.
Yeah, I guess.
Art of the possible.
Well, see, that's what I doubt. I mean, Sam's margin of victory has been increasing over the last three or four elections. He wins by a greater majority, you know, each election that comes down the pike. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I guess he could face a little pressure from, you know, what's-his-face, the Republican who's been term limited out.
McPherson.
So he can face a little trouble from McPherson, who's a hometown boy. It might cut into his percentages, but I don't think my entering the race is going to severely impact Sam. If I thought my involvement in the race was going to throw the election of the Republicans, I'd be out. I'd pull out immediately. But I see this as a way. I don't think there's any danger of that. But I see that that Sam's kind of a milquetoast liberal. He needs to be pushed a little harder, frankly, a lot harder on a lot of issues. Considering the bully pulpit he has, he's not using it very well, and I think the people in this community deserve a lot better from their congressional representatives. So that's why I'm in the race. I have no illusions that mainstream politics, congressional politics on that level have any relevance to, like, people's lives, you know, in communities that's in these people. But I think we can affect the terms of the debate by doing so, and I definitely don't think that eliminates and... What would you say, you know, for, what's the word I'm looking for? No, preempts. Any other types of organizing around political issues. It's part and parcel of, like, the toolbox. You have all your tactics. You take one out when it's appropriate. There's an election coming around.
Why did that word toolbox one more time? I'm going to start fuming and raging. We're talking with Joe Williams here on Portola. Joe, any final advice for the demoralized, the discouraged, and the downhearted?
Speak up loudly and often. Whatever venues you can find, free speech is still the law of the land in this country, in this state, and in the city of Santa Cruz, contrary to what certain city council members, police officers, and downtown merchants might like to think. And so that's what you do. You speak up loudly and often in whatever venue you can get out, whether it's audio, whether it's print, whether it's video, however you need to get
Comic News, which has recently barred the Green Press.
Yeah, well, whatever you can, the art of the possible, right? You don't fold
a story about that one,
Just say you can, like, talk to the Green Press yourself, see if you can suss if they're willing to give you any information on why they're not in the Green, why they're not in the comic news anymore.
Something about the comic news not liking local issues, perhaps?
Perhaps. You can check on that yourself.
I know that I've always tried to get Tom to get a little local cartooning for, 14 years, and for some reason he just says, well, all they got to do is send their cartoons to me, and apparently just nobody ever does.
Yeah. Well, I could, yeah, whatever. That's a whole different issue, but you can talk to the Green. I think the Green Press deserves support for their issues raised. They're
now in the center of the connection, right?
Right. And they're also doing a website that has other stories that aren't included in their print edition.
Yeah,
www.greenpress.org, I believe. And
with that, we have to go. It's been fun talking to you, Uncle Joe. Anything? Give us a quick 20-second wrap-up.
20-second wrap-up. How about this one? This is my favorite tag-off when I was doing Free Radio Berkeley. And always remember, folks, when you're out there smashing the ever-loving holy motherfucking crap out of the corporate fascist state, always remember to keep a smile on your lips and a song in your heart.
wrong. Women have to make it go. Well, women gotta make it stop. Women gotta make it stop.
And that was Winnie and Sam from the, 80s album Different, Therefore Equal by Peggy Seeger. Actually, 90s, 92. Although it might have come out in the 80s originally. I think it did. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And you can give us a call if you want, 427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. And this is the last hour and 12 minutes of Bathrobs Pierre's Broadsides, twice-weekly show concerned with the civil rights of poor and homeless people, or people who may well become poor and homeless, or people whose situation impacts or has implications for poor and homeless people. I've been particularly interested in the City Council sellout of the De Anza rent control. Senior folks. Ran into an activist yesterday who wished to remain anonymous, but he gave me some kind of an interesting story I'm going to pass on to you. Some of you folks may know Neil Coonerty, who's owner of the Bookshop Santa Cruz and also former mayor and former city council member, recently put out a t-shirt last year, Keep Santa Cruz Weird, and bumper stickers. A small percentage of the profits of that t-shirt went to street performers, and actually became the basis for a nest egg, some of which has gone to the still kind of unorganized, but maybe starting to get there, who knows, Street Performers Union. I hope that they get rolling, or hope that we get rolling. We're kind of having trouble meeting with all the, I'm one of the people that has trouble meeting. Anyway, Neil Coonerty has, of course, a large and famous bookstore in town. Was involved in the Borders fight, was a kind of a leading light behind the downtown ordinances. Whether he wrote them or not, I think Barisoni wrote them. He was a major person in pushing them in 1994. The laws criminalized sitting on the sidewalk was sitting anywhere on the sidewalk at that time. That was illegal under the Coonerty law, illegal to ask for a dime after dark. That's still illegal. Illegal to sit on the sidewalk anywhere, or to sit down while, quote, panhandling, even if you're doing so peacefully, illegal to sit in a group of two. All this, Coonerty wanted actually panhandling permits in his original law. But more recently, Coonerty, for a brief period of time, he kind of opposed the city council's proposed expansion of criminalizing street performers and political tablers and people with, quote, display devices from the 10-feet forbidden zones from buildings, kiosks, benches, crosswalks, phone booths, fountains, bunches of things, eliminating, I guess it was 60 or 65% of the sidewalk. The city council wanted to increase it to 14 feet, and he opposed that, and when they kept it at 10 feet, he somehow felt that was a big victory, and declared victory and went home. Of course, they also passed the move-along law, which made it illegal for anybody to have a table for more than an hour, unless, of course, you're a police officer, or you're connected with Borders Bookstore, or perhaps you got the permission of Candy Jackson's Shoes to be on the sidewalk in front of you. Although, why that should have anything to do with the public sidewalk, where we all have rights and merchants aren't supposed to have any special privileges, not clear. In fact, what it really is, of course, massive selective enforcement that goes on, unjustified by the law, but now emboldened and empowered by the new law, which Coonerty supported, or at least didn't oppose, the move-along law. And this person, this activist, came up to me, and she or he told me that, she had been holding a sign up downtown about some political cause, I guess, and been told that they can't hold it for more than an hour. They have to move along. That's not actually what the law says. The law says if you have a display device, which is really a table or a cloth, something holding items, or a guitar case, that's... So they were misapplying the move-along law, and then the police periodically reinterpret the laws to their own benefit, or not even to their own benefit. So it sort of seems to be a random thing, like storms or the latest inclinations of Officer Bechtel. That's Pam Bechtel, Big Book Bechtel. I've taken to calling her. She's a CSO that just loves to write tickets. You may see her downtown. Ticketing some hapless person for sitting on a planter edge, which is hurting no one, but of course is technically illegal under the city council's anti-homeless laws. Anyway, this guy was told to move along, and he did, and he wanted to find out what the law was. We kind of ran into each other in the Capitola Book Cafe yesterday, and I told him, no, that's not illegal, and he mentioned that, or she mentioned, actually, well, this person mentioned that they had been, I'll call him a he, that he had been kicked out of the Bookshop Santa Cruz by Neil Coonerty, and actually not even personally by Neil Coonerty, by Coonerty's staff. Apparently he proposed that there be a, he had heard about this Keep Santa Cruz Weird t-shirt, which, by the way, now no longer has the little emblem underneath Keep Santa Cruz Weird, support your local street performers. That has been removed. So street performers no longer get the support of Neil Coonerty anymore, nor do they get any of the profits. I think they got a relatively small percentage of any of the profits in the first place. Though, as I said, 3,500, 3,300, something like that, went to the street performers group. Tom Noddy and a couple of other folks are administering it in a process that it was consensually agreed upon by the street performers who showed up, many of them from the Only in Santa Cruz benefit, which wasn't really a benefit, it was more kind of a celebration, and lost a little money, but it was sort of the showcase. You heard me talking about it with Joe Williams in this long section that we just had, where I was critical that they were, you know, doing a benefit instead of going out on the streets and really benefiting street performers by changing the laws and challenging this crazy shit. They're just having a little kind of nicey-nice inside Loudoun Nelson Center for 2 days or two nights and then moving right along. But anyway, this fellow was kicked out of the Bookshop Santa Cruz in this kind of series of strange events where he was explaining, he was thinking of putting out a Keep Santa Cruz White t-shirt, which would be essentially a joke, because he pointed out that Santa Cruz doesn't have much diversity. It's a pretty white community. And he was going to have on one side of the Keep Santa Cruz White, and on the other side, he was going to have stats of each of the counties, different counties, and what percentage were white and which were non-white. And apparently, a person of darker hue heard this and didn't pick up on the joke or didn't understand. He tried to explain it to that person, and the person told him, "I want you out of the store." So he left. And he came back several days later to the Jim Hightower event, which a lot of events happen in Coonerty's bookstore, even though many people, have been banned from that bookstore. I have also been banned from that bookstore, and certainly have been for 9 years. Talk about that. I've talked about it before. Talk about it again. But he went back in there to the Hightower event, and at the end of the event, he was approached by two police officers, Ryan Coonerty, that's Neil's son, and by the employee who found his Keep Santa Cruz White t-shirt a bad idea and the basis for a ban. And they said, the cops said to him, "Hey, you understand you were told to leave and you didn't leave." And he said, "No, no one's told me anything today." And so I said, Ryan Coonerty said, "Well, you know, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'd like to talk about this issue where I've been banned, since, you know, maybe I could tell you my story and you could hear the other side and you could sort of weigh both sides and see what you think." And he said, "I don't have to do that. I've decided. You're out." I said, "Oh, it's sort of interesting. Jim Hightower was talking about the Patriot Act. Now we're having a situation where people are surveilled, where, say, an employee would overhear something you said, and on that basis, an anonymous trial would take place, and then they would call in the goon squads to enforce it. It all seems kind of, it all works together." And anyway, this activist, the way I can't describe the situation as colorfully and as accurately, and as, I don't know if it was accurate, but it certainly sounded to have a lot of detail when he talked to me about it, as he did, and I wish he were on the air to talk about it, and perhaps he will call in or at some point come in there. He wanted me to put out a kind of an appeal for those who have been banned from Bookshop Santa Cruz. If you've been banned from the Bookshop Santa Cruz, you can either call in now and talk about it, or you could call in to the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, and that's my off-air number and also the number for Huff. And leave a number where you can be reached, and I'll get back to you. Or you can email me at rnorse2@hotmail.com, which you can also do, by the way, on the air. If you want to get me something to read on the air, rnorse2@hotmail.com is a place to go. It's available right now. In fact, I'm even checking it as we speak. So that's kind of amusing. I've been banned from the Bookshop Santa Cruz for 9 years because of a protest I led way back during those downtown ordinances in 1994 when Coonerty was a big pusher for the ordinances, and we had a large rally in front of his store denouncing his position on that. and somebody threw a rock through the window a couple days later, and he blamed me for it, even though I would never counsel such a thing, didn't do it, opposed it, and he's blamed me ever since. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Oh, you have to get to the point on these stories. You're getting sidetracked too much. Tell the story. You lost us there.
Help me.
Got sidetracked so much that no one knows what happened to this person.
Oh, well, he was banned.
Yeah, but why?
He was banned because of the Keep Santa Cruz White T-shirt, apparently. They felt that an offensive suggestion.
Somehow that got lost in your story. You got sidetracked so much... telling all these little innuendos about this, that, and the other
thing.
Well,
I'm glad you brought us back on target,
there,
caller.
You got to, like, get to the point, Robert.
Well, thank you. And any other thoughts?
That's the only one that came to mind.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. So, yeah, I'm sorry if I didn't get to that. I thought I did, actually, but apparently I didn't. So, yeah, he's been banned. If it's free speech and if it's goon squad stuff and surveillance and, I mean, you know, and if it's, we're talking, I guess it's not really a public issue in the same way, let's say, that the move-along law, which actually criminalizes people for having a table on the sidewalk for more than an hour while registering voters, would presumably be an appropriate subject for anyone who's concerned about the Bill of Rights, which the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, nor... abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble for a redress of their grievances, which is, I believe, more or less the text of the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, one of the key amendments in the Bill of Rights. Now, this issue, this whole move-along law, which Steve Argue, a local activist who has run for city council, who has eloquently fought for the rights of poor people, homeless people, laboring people, just ordinary folks downtown, against the city council's gentrification priorities for years, and has been beaten up for it, and has been jailed for it, and has gone to jail for long periods of time defending a woman in the 1999 McPherson Center Yugoslavia peace demonstration, where he punched Officer Lefebvre in order to protect a woman that Lefebvre was twisting the arm of while she was trying to hold a child. We've been all through that. Anyway, Argue and others are, you know, facing either, if not criminal charges, Argue's facing criminal charges on November 14th at 10 a.m., those who want to check him out in Department 2. But others are just facing the general intimidation that is coming with this. And like this activist we just talked about, who preferred to remain anonymous, was told he, under the move-along law, he had to move along with his sign every hour. I, of course, have raised the issue in the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and they initially were quite outraged about the whole thing and were ready to pass something, but then apparently concern how this would impact the city council set in, and concern that, well, other issues might get involved. All got very complicated, and suddenly kind of an authoritarian directive from the top of this committee essentially took the issue off the agenda and declared that we're concerned only with the Patriot Act as passed by the federal government and not with these local things. And I said to myself, well, okay, I mean, I guess I can buy that in some level, but then one would like to see people from this Bill of Rights Defense Committee also defending the Bill of Rights in other ways, if they have any real concern about the Bill of Rights. Maybe they just want to make sure this committee is very specific, but as citizens, one would think they would also be up for defending other issues. And while I haven't seen much defense by people who had previously been involved in defending civil rights locally, but don't seem too interested anymore. And again, some of it has to do with, you know, you go where the action is. There's a lot of people on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and in the last few days there have been a lot of interesting emails coming out of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, by the way, in case you're interested in them. They have their meeting at 6 o'clock at Charlie O's in Felton, which is up in one of those shopping centers up there, Charlie O's. Check it out in the phone book. And they are planning to go back to city council with a long and interesting response to Kennedy, who refused to put he broke his word to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, said he was going to put on the agenda their proposed strengthening of protections against the Ashcroft-Bush Patriot Act stuff. But he decided at the last minute, actually I think he decided a year ago when he crushed the whole stronger proposal when it was proposed back in November of last year. But he informed them in last month that he wasn't going to do this. I informed them, of course, 2 months before that he wasn't going to do this, but I'm, of course, considered an untrustworthy, radical, and questionable source, so I wasn't listened to. In fact, I was blackballed from the group. And my issue, which I think was the issue of many people, and isn't of many people in Santa Cruz, which is our local civil rights issue around the Bill of Rights here, even just circulating the petition against the Patriot Act or to make the city council strengthen its so-called protections, was deep-sixed. After being passed 3 times by this committee, by this Bill of Rights Defense Committee, it was dumped. And that's upset me. I haven't gone into it a lot of length on other shows because I favor, you know, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's work in favor of getting the city council to take a stronger stand against the Patriot Act. I think that's important. I think that's good. Interestingly enough, I got an email from Joe Williams, in which Joe points out that there was a $265,000 grant unanimously accepted by the Board of Supervisors from the Office of Homeland Security for domestic preparedness. This was way back in June, for pharmaceutical equipment for the emergency medical services and a dedicated bomb vehicle for the sheriffs after the vote authorizing the application passed the bill of the Board of Supervisors on June 3rd. And there's a bunch of emergency service administrators administering this money. Head of the police department, Belcher, or is it Sapone? I'm not sure at the moment. Fire chief, head health officer. And there's another $613,000 application in the wind, again, to the Office of Homeland Security. This is our county. City has also applied for such grants. And my question is, where are the strings here, and where is the independence involved, and what's going on here? We need a full debate on this. Maybe there was a full debate. You know, I wasn't at these Board of Supervisors meetings, so I'm just expressing some concerns, not sure what's happening. I heard yesterday from an activist who was in front of the library, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, circulating the De Anza petitions, that a librarian came out and told this activist that she did not appreciate their being there because her job was at stake by the seniors defending their homes. And then apparently another senior librarian came out and said that they were not even, they would appreciate it if they would move along. This was not even, in, you know, they weren't inside the library, which I think they have a perfect right to be anyway. They weren't on the steps of the library, which they certainly have more of a right to be. And they were on the sidewalk. And the librarians had the nerve to try to use their positions as librarians. Well, the guilt trip them is okay, I guess. You know, I mean, you've got a right to express your view. But to start telling people to move along, you know, it shows the kind of mentality that the city council is spreading. I mean, maybe it comes from Ashcroft and Bush, but it's being conveyed by the liberal likes of Kennedy and Riley. And by the way, those who are interested, there was a small, very small picketing protest at the Riley's Good Things to Eat on, I guess it was Friday evening. I was one of the picketers. I think there were two of us, the Mighty Two, we call ourselves, the dynamic duo. And actually, a lot of people were very positive in the cars, took our flyers. The protest has to do with Riley's votes to criminalize poor people and her support for the camping ban, the sleeping ban, and of course this vicious new expansion of the downtown ordinances that she essentially masterminded, she and Porter, summer before this last past summer. So not much is happening there. I went to the Human Rights Organization meeting that organized it. Apparently I got there late, like many minutes late, so they might have met and left, but I don't know what they're up to. I'm hoping that the activists aren't dispersing, and if you want to get in touch with Huff on this issue, we're meeting Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square Restaurant, 423-4833. We're a group that concerns ourselves with varieties of things ranging from discrimination against the poor in restaurants to these silly and vicious ordinances to the criminalization or the elimination of things like rent control, which has a major impact on poor people. Even though we don't have real rent control broadly in Santa Cruz, and Bob LaMonica's right about that, we need that broadly. It impacts all of us, I think, when they can dismantle rent control for a mobile home park. By the way, the Public Safety Committee, that's the Kennedy, Rotkin, Porter oversight group. I always have to smile when I say that, of the police department. They keep an eye on the police department. Actually, the police department keeps an eye on them. Instead of having a weak, generally ineffectual, but it was beginning to ask questions, Citizens Police Review Board, Kennedy and Rotkin dismantled that board. And instead we have a Public Safety Committee, and of course their little paid $40,000 a year attorney Bob Aronson from Palo Alto, who comes down twice a month to shuffle papers in the former office for 3 or 4 hours. If you want to talk to him, he shows up on Monday afternoons, and the number to call is 420-6295. The one-time Citizens Police Review Board number is now, I used to call them the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board because they were so weak, but on the other hand, as I said, they were beginning to change under Mark Halfmoon. They were beginning to look into things like selective enforcement, racial profiling, police failure to have a credible and persuasive display of force policy. In other words, cops could whip out their guns or do things with their guns and didn't have to make reports on them. You know, the public never knew about it. These issues have all been rolled up and wrapped under the rug. We have things like Chief Belcher's little in-house justification of his police department's policies, the racial profiling study, which we had a nice little slideshow on at the last city council with the chief out there, and I think he was in uniform doing his slideshow. This is a report commissioned by the police department. I mean, how independent, how objective can such a thing be if it's commissioned by the very department that it's supposed to be, you know, investigated or overseen or looked into? It's pretty sad stuff. And there wasn't any opportunity for public comment on that at the city council meeting either. So, again, this public safety committee, which if you're interested, does meet Monday. That's tomorrow, 7 p.m., in the city council support room, which is the room right next to the city council chambers. It's kind of in the back. If you walk toward what used to be the payphone down there, which has been removed, down at the city council area, you will find this little room where you get to sit and watch Kennedy, Rotkin, and Porter ignore you until the end of the meeting, when they'll give you a three-minute opportunity to make public comment. I was able to get the minutes of these past meetings. Porter apparently asked Chief Belcher for a description of... let me get this right. He wanted a proposed... he wanted a statement from the police department on public detention policy, a draft statement of a card to be distributed by the Santa Cruz police officers and other employees. It spells out an individual's rights if you are stopped by a police officer to be reviewed by the Public Safety Committee. And what he got instead was a 40-page document, which I was able to obtain, which talks about how police officers, sort of an internal police department document, which tells cops what they should be concerned about, which doesn't tell the citizenry what to expect. At least I haven't found that part of the document yet. I got to perhaps look more closely. Who knows? But you can go on the 20th, that's tomorrow, and you can check that out and see what's going on. And that's, again, essentially it's at City Council Chambers, but one door over at 7 o'clock tomorrow. And then, of course, on Tuesday at 7 o'clock, you get to see Kennedy and Rotkin trashing the De Anza folks some more. That'll be fun to watch as they try to pressure, bully, and terrorize them into not challenging the sacred decisions of the City Council around the De Anza settlement. The settlement being, of course, essentially sacrificing every third senior, or is it every senior in that particular group, at least in terms of the commitments that were made to the seniors back in 1994 when they signed these contracts. So that's happening. I've talked a bit about the Bill of Rights Defense Committees having kind of more interesting stuff coming out recently, and they have, and I'm going to kind of run through some of that. I want to remind people, because I don't think we should forget about this, that the Patriot Act is a real menace. The Patriot Act is an act, of course, signed by into law by Bush to increase national security, ha ha ha, in the aftermath of the September 11th terrorist attacks. There's a conference coming up, which is going to be kind of a national conference on the issue, which Ashcroft doesn't like. It's a conference of all the Bill of Rights defense committees throughout the country and all of those opposing the Bill of Rights. And Ashcroft is defending the so-called Patriot Act. There's going to be panel discussions in this upcoming conference, which I think it's at some city in the East. I'm looking at its... you can go to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's website and find that out, BORDC, Bill of Rights Defense Committee. I believe, is where you can find it. It could be also at cruiserights.org, C-R-U-Z-R-I-G-H-T-S, I believe. And let's see. Yeah, there was a... It's going to be near Washington, D.C., ACLU, American Library Association, Center for Democracy and Technology, Council on American Islamic Relations, National Lawyers Guild, People for the American Way are participating. Interesting stuff. And among the group's specific concerns, 190 towns, cities, and counties in three states have passed resolutions initiating the campaign for localities to declare themselves civil liberties safe zones. I want to remind, I hope that's not just civil liberties in terms of the limited protection against federal abuses, but I guess if you were talking to our local Bill of Rights Committee, that's all they would say they're interested in at this time. But I don't think that, again, it's kind of deceptive, but anyway, moving along. In 6 months, the number of resolutions against the Patriot Act has more than tripled. Among the group's specific concerns, the USA Patriot Act gives the FBI and the CIA greater rights to wiretap phones, monitor email, survey medical, financial, and student records, and break into homes and offices without prior notification. It creates a new crime of domestic terrorism that is so broadly defined it may be applied to citizens acting legally to express their dissent. Under this act and other legislation, non-citizens are being deported or detained indefinitely without judicial appeal. The dangers of the USA Patriot Act are augmented by a Bureau of Prisons order allowing federal agents to abridge the attorney-client privilege by eavesdropping on conversations between lawyers and their clients held in federal custody. Also, the Justice Department has dismantled regulations against COINTELPRO operations that were enacted following governmental abuses against the civil rights and peace movements of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, although Lockyer, I guess it was yesterday or came out or day before, with new state regulations which say that the federal, the restrictions on police agencies in the state attending political rallies and such is they have to be investigating criminal behavior to attend such rallies in an official capacity and gather files on people. Ashcroft, of course, has overruled that as for federal agents, stating that they can just go there as they want and pick up what they want, and particularly if you're suspected of terrorism. Interestingly enough, the Michael John Civil Liberties Institute is preparing a book challenging U.S. human rights violations. They found hundreds of examples of killings, tortures, deportations, detentions, searches and seizures, and arrests. They'll be submitting it as a report to the Office of the Inspector General of the U.S. and the U.S. State Department in Washington and to the U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights in Geneva in 2004. Might be good to submit it to the Santa Cruz City Council, too, insofar as we have local human rights violations. Oh, no, I forgot. Local doesn't count here. Let's put that one aside. They are offering a $50 reward for the clearest and most accurate description. That's the Michael John Foundation, Civil Liberties Institute, of a violation of human rights on U.S. land since 9/11. And I think that Huff is now prepared to offer a $25 reward for the most accurate and clearest description of a violation of human rights in the city of Santa Cruz. So if you've had your civil rights violated in the city of Santa Cruz, give a call to Huff, give me a description, and we're going to present that at the next Huff meeting, or actually a couple of Huff meetings down the road, but we'll start at the next Huff meeting Wednesday. You can also bring your civil rights violation to the Huff meeting, and we will start racking up the civil rights violations to see who is the lucky winner. $50, of course, would be better, but I think we're talking, what, 20, 25? We'll see what's happening there. Anyway, you can apply both for the $50 reward for the Michael John Institute, and you should apparently contact Box 673, Berkeley, California. You can go to award at award@mcli.org. award@mcli.org for the $50 Michael John Worst Civil Liberties Violation. Or you can email rnorse2@hotmail.com for the Worst Santa Cruz Civil Liberties Violation. Want to make a little money? Want to go out to dinner? Well, get that civil liberties violation on the email, or come to a Huff meeting, or give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF. Another interesting little detail, again, compliments to Joe Williams, a former CIA director and a former deputy national security advisor on Tuesday, October 14th, advocated major changes to the U.S. intelligence establishment in testimony before the Independent Commission investigating the terror attacks. John M. Deutsch, CIA director in the mid-90s, and James B. Steinberg, deputy national security advisor in the Clinton regime. It ain't just the Bush people that are got to be watched, endorsed two structural reforms, I like that word, appointing a director of national intelligence separate from the CIA and creating a domestic security service modeled after Britain's MI5. And in an interview on the eve of his testimony, Steinberg said U.S. counterterror efforts remain hampered by decades-old walls separating by law the work of the FBI and the CIA. FBI operates domestically, traditionally focuses on catching lawbreakers. CIA works abroad and focuses on learning secrets. The beauty of the MI5 model is it breaks down both those walls, said Steinberg, director of the Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institute. National Commission on Terrorist Attacks in the U.S., which is reviewing intelligence failures as part of its probe of 7/11, was also hearing Tuesday from a second former National Intelligence Director who cautions against a dramatic realignment. No one would question that management can always be improved, but major organizational change is not the salvation. Anyway, there's a proposal to merge, well, to create an agency that can do what both the FBI and the CIA does, a la MI5 over in England. And this, of course, apparently Feinstein has proposed legislation to split the duties of the current director of Central Intelligence to two jobs, CIA Director and National Intelligence Director. National Intelligence Director, appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate to a 10-year term, would oversee all intelligence agencies, setting priorities for collecting information and monitoring cooperation. CIA Director would be limited to running one agency. Ridge visited MI5 headquarters. He was the head of the Homeland Security Program here. He said he doubted the Bush administration would create a similar agency because MI5's powers would be unacceptable under the U.S. Constitution. The FBI Director Mueller also opposes the idea of MI5. MI5 describes itself as Britain's defensive security intelligence agency. It's a domestic partner to MI6, the foreign intelligence agency. MI5 cannot detain or arrest its targets, but seeks to gain advantage over them by covertly obtaining information about them for countering their activity. Reflecting the difference in approaches across the Atlantic, MI5 is resisting a move by Prime Minister Tony Blair's government to allow wiretap evidence to be used in criminal trials, according to the Guardian newspaper. The spy agency is concerned such a move would allow suspects to learn too much about MI5 tactics. In contrast, the Justice Department recently won the right to use a secret intelligence court to issue wiretap warrants that might obtain information used in criminal proceedings. The Bush administration has worked to improve intelligence gathering and sharing since the September 11th attacks. So we got the danger of an FBI that can both wiretap you and prosecute you at the same time. So they can do what they want and they can use what they get in violation of the Constitution to go after you some more. And another interesting article, Franchini, retired Chief Justice of the New Mexico Supreme Court, gave a speech on September 12th, some of which I'm going to quote. For the next few minutes, I'd like to speak with you about a subject which I'm sure every New Mexican Foundation for Open Government member cherishes, the public's right to know. What does that phrase mean to me? Secrecy in a democratic government is the antithesis to all that a representative democracy stands for. It keeps the people in the dark and destroys any opportunity that they have to speak out for or against any governmental action. When access to governmental activity is denied or restricted in any way, and access to the opportunity to observe that activity is stopped, democracy dies. It's just that simple. For if this is truly a country of, by, and for the people, then the people must be informed. If they're expected to act, the people have the right to know. But what is it that we, the people, have the right to know? Certainly we have the right and need to know the truth, what's really going on. We have the right and need to know the true facts about governmental activity. We also have the right to demand that. But unfortunately, we usually don't. The dark space between ignorance and knowledge, more often than not, is filled in this day of instant communication with stories, spins, and opinions of those with no knowledge or expertise and out-and-out misdirections and fabrications. Do we have a right to know misdirections and fabrications? I believe that we actually have a right not to. This organization's main interest should be continuing battle to have access to all areas of governmental action and to expose when they recognize that the stories, spins, and misdirections and opinions without basis for what they are and what they create, the illusion that the people really know what's going on when they don't. In this time of instant communication, it can be most difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff. More often than not, I'm afraid the separation is made for us by others, and the chaff is what is usually distributed. The Foundation's mission becomes more difficult because if the chaff is distributed and emphasized rather than the truth, it's usually too late to do anything about it once we recognize it for what it is. What's worse is a violation of the most basic principle. The public's right to know becomes the public's right to know nothing. Another more destructive form of deception today is the selling of fear. Fear is the most debilitating of all human emotions. A fearful person will do anything, say anything, accept anything, reject anything, if it makes him or her feel more secure for her own or family's or her country's security and safety, whether it actually accomplishes it or not. It works like a charm. A fearful people are the easiest to govern. Their freedom and liberty can be taken away, and they can be convinced to believe that it was done for their own good, to give them security. They can be convinced to give up their liberty voluntarily. Recently, the passage of the USA Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act have resulted in the most direct attacks on the Bill of Rights that I've seen in my lifetime. These acts were passed without any meaningful opposition and still have considerable public support. The way the government is going to be, the USA Patriot Act, Patriots Act, is an acronym for Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Institute and Obstruct Terrorism. Get it? USA, Uniting and Strengthening America by Patriot, providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. That's the Patriot Act. The way the government is going to be provided with these appropriate tools is to temporarily suspend or eliminate as much of our Constitution and its Bill of Rights as it can without court oversight or intervention so that we will not be at a disadvantage in the war against terrorism. That's the idea. Think about it for a minute and then ask yourself, why in the world we voluntarily do to ourselves that which our enemies over the last 200 plus years have not been able to get us to do by force? Why would we be so willing to give up our God-given rights that have been verbalized in our Constitution when we have fought so hard to preserve them? It almost boggles the mind when one considers what fear for one's safety and security can accomplish. These bipartisan, virtually unopposed legislative governmental actions are saying to us, if you temporarily give up some of your liberty and freedom now, you will be made more secure in the future. That, my friends, is a terrible lie. To paraphrase Benjamin Franklin, one who trades his freedoms for security deserves neither. I might add that that person will finally lose both. The people have a right to know what their government intends to do about the war on terrorism. That includes all of its branches, including the judicial branch. And this goes on at length. It's a very good article. You can get it, I guess, by getting in touch with cruiserights.org. It may be on their website. It was emailed to me as a part of the email list. I think if you email resist@best.com, he can send you a copy of it. Interesting stuff. Bill of Rights Defense Committee apparently is planning an event. I remind you, they're meeting tomorrow at 6 Scotts Valley at Charlie O's. And I'm, you know, you've heard me criticize them a lot, and I will continue to criticize them. I also stay in communication with some of the members of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, always hoping that we can see some actual defense of the Bill of Rights locally instead of sort of this national lobbying effort against a bad, very bad, an unconstitutional law, which, as you can just heard, I too very strongly oppose. But they're planning a Bill of Rights Defense Committee benefit, I believe, around the December 14th, which is the anniversary of the signing of the Bill of Rights. And they're going to get some musicians and stuff going on there. My first reaction was a kind of a cynical one, that they're going to preempt the local Bill of Rights situation for their own committee's concern with the national while ignoring the local, but, you know, we have a caller here who may be willing to comment on that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi, Robert. This is Bob Patton, the other part of the dynamic duo that was out there on Friday night.
And Emily's Good Things to Eat.
Mayor
Riley's Good Things to Eat.
And what's happening is we're still going to try to back up here. Sorry, I missed you at the meeting on Saturday, the proposed meeting. I had known before that meeting happened that several of the core members were going to be out of town on the weekend, and one other that I expected to be there didn't show, and I left at about 20 minutes after the meeting was scheduled to start. So I'm still confident that the meetings are going to accomplish something, and we will continue to be meeting on Saturday at 3 p.m. at Laurel Park. That's at the back in Loudon Nelson.
How many people showed up at the meeting?
I said nobody else showed up. I knew.
So the dynamic duo became the lone tower of strength.
There you go. But as you said, we did get quite a few flyers out and information to people. And even though some people missed it, one in particular, James Costner, who was part of initiating this, trying to get this new group together, the Human Rights Organization, had a misconnection and didn't make it there, and I feel he's somewhat disgruntled, but his efforts did not go for naught. We did have a successful ticket there. And as our flyer states, there's going to be another picket on Tuesday, October the 21st. Actually, we're going to attempt to do two of them. The first one will be an a.m. picket this time. It'll be 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then tentatively, depending on what and who shows up, in the morning one, and if I can get a hold of some of the folks who are out of town this weekend, or maybe if they hear this on the radio or on the internet, they'll give me a call, and we can arrange specifically for the evening one again from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at 1129 Mission Street.
I mean, Laurel and Mission, right.
So, with that in mind, I would like to encourage people to continue working in that respect.
Huh. Is there a number
Go ahead.
Is there a number people can call to get confirmation, let's say, on tomorrow night that this picket is actually happening? I know that you are saying it is happening, and you will, you know, you are committed, and I saw that when you were there. But to be sure, there won't just be you and one or two other people. Maybe, and maybe it will be. Maybe that's what you want. Maybe that certainly is better than nothing. No question about it.
Yeah. Well, I want to keep the forward momentum going, even if it's just, you know, two people with their legs tied together and only hopping down the street. But I have no access to the number, the message number that is on the flyer.
Uh-huh.
The person the persons that do are not in town this weekend. So I'm going to give a voicemail number that is mine.
Okay.
And that is 831-425. Uh-huh. 3307, and that's Bob Patton, and I will return the call to anyone who calls that voicemail and give them details more on what we're standing for and what the event is seeking to accomplish.
And we're talking about, of course, the abolition of the sleeping and camping bans and the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, right?
Absolutely. This is our focus. This is our goal.
Okay. That's 425-3307.
That's correct. And it's not the one that's on the flyer. It's one that I will respond to personally, or gets to me personally, and I'll respond to anybody that calls or has interest.
Sounds good to me, Bob.
All right.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're in the last half hour of the ever-exciting Bathrop Spears Broadside Show. So give us a call if you want, 427-3772. I'm talking about a number of things. We're talking about the Patriot Act. Metro Santa Cruz actually had an interesting article on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's efforts to try to get Kennedy and Riley off their butts to deal with the issue of strengthening protections against the Patriot Act. It'd be nice if they can also, you know, pay a little attention to local things, but that's not happening. But and the coverage of the Metro was pretty interesting. Finally, we're getting the details that it kind of expose what's going on. You can check it out at the newsstand. Riley has been asked to agendize an item that urges the City Council to pass a resolution with some teeth in opposition to the Patriot Act, and we get City Manager Dick Wilson telling the Metro that Arcata and Palo Alto ordinances are mealy-mouthed at best. It's interesting he should say that. It's, of course, the Santa Cruz ordinance is mealy-mouthed. And yes, he is the only one allowed to give direction to city employees. It's perfectly appropriate for elected officials to raise questions, express their concerns, but it's up to the courts to declare laws unconstitutional, Wilson opined. Riley says she'd be happy to agendize this item if the Bill of Rights Defense Committee can bring her something that doesn't violate the city charter and that is more supportive of the police department. Get that? Says Riley, the way we can say we think this must be putting you in a bad position and we support your continuing community policy. So she wants them to pat the police department on the fanny in a gentle way and tell them everything is okay. And, of course, it's the police department and the city manager that are torpedoing this shit. They're the people that are, you know, raising, and the city attorney that are raising objections. Dave Meserve, it seems to me, I haven't got the smoking gun. It is my speculation that that's the case. Dave Meserve of the Arcata City Council has stated that it's his view, looking at the Santa Cruz situation and the Arcata situation, that even though Santa Cruz is a charter city and Arcata is not, that there's no bar to Santa Cruz doing what Arcata did, which is essentially directing the city manager to direct the employees to not cooperate with federal authorities under pain of criminal penalty in the issue of unconstitutional stuff. So the fact that the Belcher is squashing this and also getting grants from the federal government kind of looks a little bit like a conflict of interest to me. I mean, not a personal conflict of interest, but you might say a departmental conflict of interest. So I find that interesting, and, you know, slowly we begin to see some indications of that in the metro. I have mentioned that you can probably find you can find lots of interesting stuff on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's website. I've also mentioned, however, that you can find a falsified chronology of what's happened in its own internal committee meetings, and that's too bad. If you look at the minutes, they have not been corrected, and they give a completely misleading and, as I said, false impression of what this committee did and didn't do around local issues. It kind of covers its unsightly physique rather, I don't know, clumsily, nicely. I don't know which way it is, but it covers it. On three occasions, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee agreed that the move-along law locally was unconstitutional, violated basic First Amendment rights, and they opposed it, and they opposed the prosecutions of people like Steve Argue and Matthew Hartog under that law, as they should. But each time, the chair, John Gibson, became more and more nervous about it, interfering with his ability to negotiate with the city council because he felt it was going off topic. He felt it was a turf war, that I and others were taking over his committee or something. I don't know. I mean, anyway, the minutes don't reflect the three votes that supported it. They instead claim that I was taking up massive amounts of time at the committee, and it's too bad. I've asked for corrections in the minutes, and I've gotten no response officially from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee on whether the minutes have been corrected. I guess I should go to the website today and see if they have. I haven't. Maybe they have been, but as far as I've not heard that they have been corrected. Nor do they give credit to Steve Argue, who brought forward and proposed the resolution that they accept the Arcata language, which they did, and then, of course, Kennedy shot them out of the water, maybe because he didn't like Steve Argue. And they, instead of criticizing Kennedy, they criticized Steve Argue, and Gibson went into a long denunciation of Steve Argue. I mean, it's just sort of depressing that we turn against each other. I know John Gibson is new to a lot of this stuff, and he has to be commended for his good work on this, but I think he's barking up the wrong tree when he does this stuff. And he kind of plays the city council, city manager, city attorney's game. We have a bad group of people in there, folks. We should recall them and get them out. And we need to do that as soon as possible, and I hope that the De Anza people, I'm afraid they're going to be exhausted after this last effort, but what we really need to get to do is get together and support recall of the chief bad policymakers, and that's really Kennedy and Rotkin that are on the council. I mean, there are others too, of course, you know, the whole council pretty much needs to go, but still, we got to look to the chief recycled renegades on that council. Department of Justice recently awarded $59.6 million in Homeland Security grants, including $50,000 to the Watsonville Police Department, $45,000 to the Santa Cruz Police Department for overtime pay for Homeland Security training and patrols. A 25% local cash match is required. 14% of the 2,039 agencies that applied received grants. The city and the county are applying for more and more of this security money. I don't see any Bill of Rights Defense Committee resolutions coming out criticizing this. I think we have to look at it pretty carefully. Also, an interesting article from resist.com. This is from Global Network. I was back on the streets again today in Brunswick, Maine, leafletting and petitioning about the USA Patriot Act. For the past couple of months, I've gone out at least once a week in our local effort to educate and activate citizens around protecting our tattered and torn Constitution of the United States. Not much of the public is aware of the Patriot Act, but every now and then someone will come along who knows about it and is delighted to see another like mind working to hang on to our sacred founding document. Today, a friend and I were at the public library. When I went there a couple of weeks ago, they ran me off, saying that a town ordinance forbade setting up an ironing board and a clipboard for petitioning. I challenged the town authorities by talking with the chief of police, who knew nothing of such an ordinance, and town clerk. I told them I'd been talking to a lawyer. Within a couple of days, a town lawyer called me to say I was free to do anything. Today, the very head librarian who ran me off before signed our petition. Yesterday, I was in Portland, handing out leaflets about the role of the Aegis Destroyer. in the Pentagon's theater missile defense system and its economic costs. For 2 hours, about eight of us held signs, banners, and handed out 300 leaflets for the lunch crowd at the downtown farmers market as part of the Keep Space for Peace Week. You've got to learn to handle rejection when you do this kind of street work. The majority of people don't want to be bothered. I work hard to get a clue about why and what they fear. Some things I've heard of from folks is they don't care. They don't want to be bothered. They've had enough doom and gloom. They're afraid to get labeled a liberal. They want the right wing to succeed, and they don't like to get involved in political issues. The most often used excuse of those not wanting to take a leaflet is, I'm all set. I don't know what that really means. On a couple of occasions, I've asked the person to explain. I didn't get a very good answer. And he goes on at great length about this. Again, another great flyer, forward from resist@best.com. Give Joe Williams an email if you want to pick up some of his stuff. He'll pass it on to you. Something we haven't talked about much, and I should be talking about a little bit at the last meeting, is the Sentinel's new campaign with the West Side business people to run off homeless people from the Natural Bridges area. You may remember the October 16th article, Camping Laws Must Be Enforced. Actually, this is an editorial from the Santa Cruz Sentinel denouncing illegally parked vehicles on the west side. String of RVs and travel trailers have been allowed and illegally cluster along Natural Bridges Drive. Illustrates a common but flawed way of thinking that a problem ignored is a problem solved. Beating the drums. I'm not aware that they are ignoring illegal vehicles a lot. But, of course, the reality is, in Santa Cruz, an affordable housing for poor people is a car, if you can afford it, or a bush, if you can't, and because there's 39 spaces tonight for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. And on another occasion, perhaps Thursday, when the show returns, between 6 and 8, I'll be playing some of Karen Brock of the Homeless Service Center's discussion of that issue with a number of us Huffers, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom members, that we had last I guess it was Thursday evening at the Homeless Resource Center, or Service Center. So to have people concerned about a bunch of illegal vehicles, or vehicles that they claim are illegal, without proposing alternatives, to me is, and I said this at the meeting, and I was challenged for it, bigotry. It's a form of bigotry. I mean, it's not bigotry to be concerned about unreasonable behavior by campers, if they're being messy or parking endlessly in front of your house and in ways that are scary. Again, we have problems here because what appears scary to one person may not be legitimately a cause for concern. And so, you know, a black man appears in a white neighborhood and everyone starts screaming and running the other way. Well, that's the way it goes, you know. Sorry, you know, the Constitution should apply to everyone and, you know, it's time to grow up and boogie. On the other hand, if there's real messes being created, thefts are being, you know, happening in the area, or that it can be directly attributed to some vans, as De Anza people apparently attributed to some homeless home dwellers back in 99, and thereby got parking laws altered or were willing to do that, that's another matter. And Huff is actually kind of trying to step up to the plate. One of our Huff members is trying to get talk to the West Side business people and see what's going on. One of our Huff members is drawing up a code of tidy camping in order to encourage people to stick to certain standards, kind of like street performers' guidelines, campers' guidelines, that would assist in dealing with concerns. But the idea that it's all a camper problem, if only these campers were less messy and didn't cluster together and all these things, then we'd all be solved. Let's keep a low profile. I don't think it's true. I mean, it's certainly true for some individuals who have successfully been able to avoid police harassment by shifting around quietly. But the fact of the matter is that it's also true that you don't have it all together often when you're in your vehicle, and you can't expect it to have it all together. And that's one of the reasons perhaps you're in your vehicle. And some of it has to do with the economic downturn, some of it has to do with the housing situation, and they can do with a variety of factors. We need to address these issues instead of simply applying some ironclad gentrification get-out-of-town standard, which is what really is being proposed instead. And in order to do that, we have to stand up in groups that organize. And I really hope that Santa Barbara has a group called Homes on Wheels, which unfortunately isn't too well organized, but they were fighting and are still fighting, and will continue to fight with the help of Santa Barbara former public defender chief Glenn Maurer against the anti-homeless parking and camping regulations down there. We're going to have a fight in our hands. We already have a fight in our hands, but Jon Golder, a local van dweller and naturalist, takes a different position than I do on the Brommer Broadway bike path, which hopefully we can also talk about in a future show. He's writing up a set of guidelines for how to deal with parking tickets. I've kind of written how to fight your camping ticket and distributed that. And if you have a camping ticket out there, or a sleeping ticket, or some other harassment ticket, and you want Huff to help, come to the Huff meeting at 8:30 on Wednesday. We can try to help you out. We don't have any attorneys on call, but sometimes attorneys drop in, and sometimes they're helpful. And some of us have been through this before and can advise you. The main deal is you disqualify referee Mulligan. He's retiring, but he hasn't retired yet. I mean, he's retired, but he's been reappointed on a temporary basis for, you know, until they get some other person in there in the basement court that handles all the infractions. You quote section 170.6 of CCP, and you say, I want to disqualify this guy. You put it in another court. You go to that court, and you plead not guilty, and then you contact Huff at 423-HUFF, and you say, help, let's get together. How do we prepare a defense here? And away you go. You also can contact Karen Brock if you've gotten a camping ticket or a sleeping ticket, because she will give you a statement that says there was no shelter. And that means the judge, if he does not want to dismiss the ticket outright, has to allow the necessity defense, which says you have a need to sleep at night. Yes, I'm sorry, Kangaroo Kelly, Municipal Judge Kangaroo Kelly, who said otherwise. You can't just sleep during the day. You have a need to sleep at night. Most people do. And when people are criminalized from doing that, it ain't constitutional. So it's hard to prove. I mean, it's hard. You have to go through a lot of shit to get there, but you can, and you should. And Huff will try to help you if you want to do that. So what else we got here before in the closing minutes? You can always call in at 427-3772. Perhaps a brief musical break might be an appropriate moment here. I like that idea. Let's take a breather.
And the crabs are crazy. They scuttle back and forth. The sand is burning. And the fish take...